ಹರಿ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನ ಬಾಲವ ಗಿರಿ ಬರದಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನ ಬಾಲವ ಗಿರಿ ವರದಾರಿ ಯಶೋರ ನನ್ನ ಪಚ ಚಂದರಂಜನ ನನ್ನ ಬಚ ಚಂದರಂಜನ ಜಾಮನ ಚೀರವನ್ನ ಚಾರಿ ಜಯರತ ಮಾರಂಭ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಗೋಪಿ ಚನ್ನ ಪಾಲವ ಬಚ ಚಂದರಂಜನ ಯಶೋದನ ನನ್ನ ಬಚ ಚಂದರಂಜನ ಜಾಮನ ತೀರ ಬಂದ ಚಾರಿ ಜಾಮನ ತೀರವನ್ನ ಚಾರಿ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರಿ 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 ರಾಮ ಹರಿ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರಿ ಹರಿ ಜಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಬಲ್ಲರಾಮ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಬಲ್ಲರಾಮ್ ಜಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಬಲ್ಲರಾಮ್ ರಾಧೇಶ್ಯಾಮ್ ಜಯ ರಾಧೇಶ್ಯಾಮ್ ರಾಧೇಶ್ಯಾಮ್ ಜಯ go haribo 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 nita go haribo jaya prabhu pada jaya prabhu pada prabhu pada jaya prabhu pada Shambhad Paramahansa Paravacchakachara Lokapati Sachishmata Divine Grace Bhaktananda Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Kota Vaishnava Niki Jai Namachari Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai Premcha Ghosh Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaur Bhaktamriti Ki Jai All glories to the sum of devotees. All glories to the sum of devotees. All glories to the sum of devotees. The glory is to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Hare Krishna, everybody. Has anyone ever been to Itchituckney River? Anyone been down the river? Yeah? Has anyone ever been there and it hasn't been flowing? You didn't get a good ride? It's just not flowing at all? Yeah, really? I've never been there when it hasn't been flowing. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about the senses, which is described in Bhagavad Gita, about how the desires that come from the senses, that they flow incessantly, just like rivers. But the one who is Krishna conscious will not be disturbed. Although the rivers all go to the ocean isn't disturbed. It doesn't get higher or lower or anything. It stays the same. So the devotees that are thinking of Krishna, I'm thinking of how they can please Krishna. To say that all their material desires, then they're like the ocean, they're very peaceful. So I'd like to discuss a little bit about the senses, since it's described that this material body is made up of all these different senses. And what to do about these desires. It's just like the Chitakni, it's always flowing. Similarly, within ourselves, there seems to be an incessant flow of desires. I don't know about you, but when I wake up in the morning, I just start desiring right away, right? I'm thinking, what am I going to do today? I want to get this done. For Krishna, I want this. It immediately starts. When we come to this material world, the gates open, we come out, and sure enough, the flow of desires already starts, right? You see little children, immediately they're wanting something. But usually desires are natural. It comes with the material body, but most likely it's because they need something. We all need something. The body needs food, so therefore the child cries when it comes out. Need protection. Need so many different sense enjoyments. But the human form of life is not meant simply to satisfy this incessant flow of desires. The human being has a tendency to overdo it a little bit, if you've noticed. I have a book. It's called Maharaja's Jewels, and it has beautiful pictures. I get ideas for designs out of it. And there's one king in India. It's all these different, you know, elaborate jewelries of the kings and everything. And one of these kings has a bed. It's silver-carved bed, and it's musical. But not only that, on each post, there's a carved, naked woman from a different country with a wig and everything. And they move, and they fan him with chamra and all different kinds of things. So a little bit absurd to think that someone will spend that kind of energy in thinking of how they can be comfortable and beyond. So this is what happens when these senses get out of control. Therefore, we can see that the senses, they never stop, even at death. We're thinking, oh, how I didn't get to do this. Oh, I have a few more things on my list. And so what happens is that makes the ingredients of another material body so that you can fulfill those desires. So if death is not the end, it simply continues. Even while you're sleeping, how many of you desired things when you've been sleeping? It seems like almost all the time. You know, you wake up and think, oh, I was thinking of this and doing this. So it's a problem for us. And so therefore we have to realize that these desires are stored in the subtle body. The subtle body is the mind and the intelligence and the false ego. We all know we have it. I can't show it to you. I can't put it on the table here, but we all have mind and intelligence, false ego. But within that subtle body are the desires that get stored there. So at the time of death, it simply goes with your soul to the next body. So it's definitely a problem because we get plagued by these desires lifetime after lifetime. And we get haunted by them. And if we don't have some control, then they can take over this human form of life, and it's simply wasted. And it's such an opportunity, because in this human form of life, we should be going deeper within our hearts to the core of all desire. And the real desire of the living entity is simply to have a loving relationship with the eternal supreme person that we're part of. But it's very difficult because we are swamped by these material desires. So what to do? We can't really stop them. You can't go out there and stop the Ichitakni. It would take you quite a while to figure out how to do that. And besides, there are some groups that say, well, actually, just empty your desires. Just leave them. Have you ever tried not to desire anything? You start desiring more things. You desire to get rid of the desire, so that's a desire. So it's pretty much impossible. So what to do? It's described that we can't really run on not desiring. We can't run on empty. In the purport of the Bhagavad Gita verse, it says that actually we have to be full. We have to be rich in fullness of Krishna, not empty. We have to be full with all kinds of thoughts of Krishna's and desires for Krishna and for that relationship again. So it's just like we used to call gas stations filling stations. I don't know, that was a long time ago. But anyway, so we can't be on empty, so we have to go to bhakti. Is like a filling station where we can fill up on Krishna consciousness. And we can pull up to the economy grade, that 10% of Krishna or less, and the rest for me, right? Or we can pull up the mid-grade, and we can have 50% for me, 50% for Krishna, right? I have to spend a little bit more money, but we're getting there. And then you can get super grade, right? So the pure devotee, the devotees with intense desire to have Krishna, they get that pure desired, and they pay for it, though. They have to sacrifice, they have to surrender their false ego, their intelligence, and their mind to Krishna. But it's a good deal, because then you don't have all that baggage that's going to make you have to come back again. So this is the process of Krishna consciousness, which is so important for us. Within bhakti, we learn so many different ways to help to control these desires. First of all, it recommends in Bhagavad Gita that we become regulated in our activities, in our sense activities, so that we can get more control of them and can ultimately conquer over them. But it's a gradual process. But at least if you regulate them, you can rein them in a little bit. It's also described that you can dovetail your desires. Prabhupada was very keen on that. He said that, you know, if you have a desire for something, then do it for Krishna, within reason. And we find that we do that all the time. Just like when I first came to Krishna consciousness, I had a problem of, because I love sports. I was really into sports. And I thought, oh, golly, how am I going to dovetail that? You know, I just dance a lot and chant a lot, something like that. And then Krishna must have heard my desire, and I got to be in charge of the recreation for the Gurukul girls for 26 years, and they ran me around like crazy for all those years, and I got that desire taken care of real fast, basketball, soccer, everything you could think of. So the dovetailing definitely does work, and you find that all of a sudden, you know, that little desire will come up, and somehow or other Krishna will figure out how you can use it for him. And it satisfies that, and many times it gets rid of it. So it's very nice of Krishna to do that. So it's described that you should, whatever you desire, try to at least desire it for Krishna. And also you can beg, borrow, steal, but get a higher taste of desire. You have to give up the other ones. It's a little difficult, but it's a sacrifice, just like to sacrifice our time in chanting japa. I mean, much rather do other things maybe. But by giving up that time, a couple hours in the morning, giving up, you know, maybe the television or something at night that keeps you up late so you can't get up early so you can chant, it's a good trade-off. Because when you start chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, what happens? You begin to contact Krishna. And then you begin to experience that pleasure you're looking for. So it's such a nice process. It makes all the sense in the world. Also, it's very important to carry a weapon with you, and it's described in Bhagavad Gita that knowledge is the weapon. So therefore, we study Bhagavad Gita. We learn so many different things, so much philosophy and science of the soul and reincarnation, how to act, how not to act. And this actually furbishes our intelligence. It makes us so satisfied and so keen that when we can go out in the material world, we can spot, don't go there. You know, it'll just spark that desire. So all these different parts of bhakti are so important, and they do work. They do work on our desires, gradually purifying them. The purifying process is sometimes a little uncomfortable, but the ultimate goal is that we do get that peace of mind, that we can not entertain some of the desires when they rush by us in a great flow. Even as devotees, desires can disguise themselves. They can sneak up on us too. You'll think, oh yes, I've subdued this one, right? And all of a sudden, another one comes up. Or one will come up you didn't even know you had. Or a new one might sprout out. So it's not an easy process, but it's the devotee learns that with determination one can conquer over these different desires. Different disguises, just like these little children, they're like a ball of senses when you're first born, and they have so many desires, and we see that, you know. They don't understand what's going on, but they just, anything they can get, they want. They want, put it in their mouth. And then when we get to be, you know, age of puberty, usually there's denial. No, I don't have any desires, but we've been there, done it, and we know, yes, we can see the desires surge up and take over. And then one point in our life, which many of us in the room have experienced or will experience, we'll all experience at some point, is mid-age life crisis. It's a real thing. And I think devotees, they're so busy in Krishna consciousness, they forget that they're not exempt from it. But all of a sudden, the senses are getting kind of worn out, and they get enraged. They go, hey, what about me? You know, you're getting a little old now. You know, and don't forget me. And they start saying, give me one more chance. Come on, I know we can enjoy. I know, just one more chance. And it's a real thing. It's a real problem for some devotees, unless you really hang on to, you know, a friend or something like that to get you through. So, yes, disguise, denial, but the desires can still be there, even at the time of death for devotees. You know, they somehow or other, they still are lingering around. Unless one becomes completely absorbed and has great friends to be with them, as we've seen in our community, people going and at the last minute being there chanting and giving so much help at the end. We were just at one lady, what's her name, Swaha's mother, when she was leaving, and we were all chanting, and devotees there bringing garlands and so many things to make it easier, to so that the only desire is to attain Krishna. So this attitude is so important at the time of death, or all the time really, is that my desire should be that I just want to make Krishna's desire my real desire. So we have to know what Krishna's desire is, and that's usually through the spiritual master, which we'll talk about. But this age, it's very difficult because of advertising, media, so many different things. The lights are blinking. Don't forget this, don't forget that. You need this, desire this, because they want the money, and they want you to be, your senses to get agitated, so you think you have to have it. So it's definitely a struggle for us. So we have to have like a filter, of the knowledge and Krishna consciousness, so we can say, no, don't go there. Accept what's favorable, reject what's unfavorable. Srila Prabhupada, he did say that we could do certain things in Krishna consciousness, but I can think of some where he actually said, no, that won't be favorable. So it's very important to take heed of your god sisters and god brothers, and honor their
their understanding of where you might be at, where you might not know you are. So this is also very important in our struggle. There's one extreme example of not just filtering, but actually halting the desires by an extreme process. It's actually within a play that we've done before. I think it's actually the sweetest play in ISKCON. It's called Nandalal. And it's about Bhaktisaridas, or Bilamangal Thakur, as he is known. And he was a great Brahmin sage who was many, many years ago, I think 8th century, in South India. And he was a very learned Brahmin, meditating, absorbed in Krishna consciousness, became a householder. But then he was sitting and meditating and caught the eye of a prostitute and actually became very attracted to that prostitute. And her name was Chintamani. And he actually went to her, and she ended up preaching to him, ultimately, explaining that if you were only this attached, you know, to Krishna as to me. Actually, Bilamangal Thakur got so attached that he would go through rains and storms just to have her association. But she became very much enlivened. She actually became very meditative on Krishna and decided to instruct him on the real purpose of human life. And he took heed to that, and he left and became very meditative, but again, at one time, lost control of his senses and became attracted to another woman. And finally, when he woke to his senses, he asked that lady for her hairpins, and he took them and said, "These are my enemies," and he blinded himself to completely divert this desire. And he became a very great devotee. Within his heart, in the core of his heart, he just wanted to serve and love Krishna. So he took off, blinded, and he journeyed from South India to Vrindavan, a very long journey, not easy when you can't see. And so he kept asking his way, and finally he arrives in Vrindavan, not knowing that it was Vrindavan, but he met some little cowherd boy that said, "Oh, you know, old man, you're chanting these names of Krishna so loud. What are you doing?" And he goes, "I'm just trying to get to Vrindavan to find Krishna." And he said, "Oh, you're actually in Vrindavan." And he said, "Oh, well, I can't see, but tell me, what is it like here?" And he says, "Oh, it's just a bunch of trees." And this is Krishna speaking, actually. But he knew of this Brahmin's desire, his intense desire to see him within his heart and to have that loving relationship with him again. And so he would sit and chant and glorify the Supreme Lord. And, of course, Krishna is attracted by that. Krishna has desires, too. If we don't have desires unless Krishna has desires. So Krishna has a desire to hear his glories and to be in the presence of his loving devotee. And so he would come every day, bring some milk. And the Bilamangal Thakur got so attracted to this boy, although he couldn't see him. And one day he didn't show up, and he was so upset. "Oh, where is this Nandalal? Where is he? Where is he?" And he practically had a heart attack. And then finally Nandalal came with the milk and said, "Oh, what's wrong? What's wrong?" And then he started to realize only this attachment could be for Krishna. And he's such a wonderful person. And then he realized this must be Krishna. And he ran after him trying to catch him. And Bilamangal Thakur said, "You might escape my grip, but you cannot escape my heart." And so Bilamangal Thakur, he reached perfection. He actually saw Krishna. He actually had the darshan of the Supreme Lord. And he wrote one book called Krishna Karnamrita. And this was realizations of him were so important and so nectarine. They're all poetry about how Krishna actually looks, although he can never see him. But Lord Chaitanya was in South India, and he actually relished the works of this Krishna Karnamrita and the Brahma Samhita, and he had them written down and taken. He would take them with him wherever he went. And so I thought I'd read a couple of the verses so you can see what kind of desire and will bring out about this realization of Krishna in such a beautiful way. May that indescribable effulgence, having the sweetest lotus face, attractive with a sweet smile, having wide eyes and abundant, charming locks, decorated with a proud peacock feather, forever illuminate my heart. Greedy for possessing the desired object, which is poison and bondage for the heart, which means that the poison will kill his pride and will make his heart so bound up to Krishna. It's a really beautiful poetry. Here's another one. Actually, the way Balaram's locks are today reminds me of that description, all curly locks. Here's another one. When will the youth, with the peacock feather in his crown, cool our eyes with the moon of his tender face, marked with a smile flowing with streams of honey? So this whole book is just full of nectar, of realizations, of someone who really desired within the core of his heart to have Krishna. And of course, Krishna surely accepted him back into his association. Actually, within his lifetime, he spent 700 years in Vrindavan chanting the glories of Krishna, it's described. And he was actually in the pastimes of Krishna during that time, even though he was in his material body. So these prayers are also another means of reviving our lost desire too. That desire that we should have, that intense desire that will allow us to see Krishna too. There are so many prayers in our songs. One I particularly like is in the Gopinath prayers, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying to Gopinath. It says, after sitting in the core of my heart and subduing my mind, please take me to you. In this way, the horrible dangers of the world would disappear. This is my only desire, O Lord, and I submit it at your lotus feet, that unmotivated devotion to you may constantly awaken in my heart. So we can practice saying these prayers, and hopefully it will awaken that within our hearts. And another one is very nice. As much attachment as I have for worldly affairs, I pray that a similar degree of attachment may develop for you. So this perfection of desire is something that we really need to work for. There's also a prayer that we say every day. Sometimes unconsciously we say these prayers, especially the ones that we say every day. But it's when we're praying to the spiritual master, we actually say that, my only desire is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. Attachment to his lotus feet is the perfection of all desire. So actually, we don't know. I don't know about any of you, but I don't know what Krishna really wants, what his desire is for me. It's only by the grace of the spiritual master that we know what Krishna wants. Like, you could live with someone for a long time, husband, wife, friends. They can live, and after a while, after 10, 20 years, you begin to know what their desires are. You know, when they do a certain thing, you know, oh, they want this, you know what not to want, what to do, what to not to do. But we've been away from Krishna for so long. How do we know what Krishna really wants? It's only really by the grace of someone who is with Krishna all the time, like Srila Prabhupada, the spiritual master, that will know what Krishna wants. Therefore, yes, the words coming from his mouth, by following his instructions, that will help us to know. We were reading a verse early this morning that said that actually Krishna will know from the spiritual master what that person needs. And therefore, he will go in your heart, and he will purify your heart for you just by the grace of the spiritual master. There's a couple of nice prayers that describe this, the very important position of this spiritual master. It says, I will stand before a Vaishnava with folded hands, a cloth binding my neck and a straw between my teeth, sincerely awaiting his order. Hearing about all my miserable sufferings, the Vaishnava Thakur will submit an appeal to Lord Krishna on my behalf. By the prayer of the Vaishnava, the all-merciful Lord Krishna will then become compassionate towards such a sinner as me. So this is really our link to bring that desire to Krishna and to arouse that desire in us to please Krishna's desire. It's so very important to have that spiritual master's association. And we will have some very nice opportunities this week to hear some from very devout disciples of Srila Prabhupada and understand more of what Srila Prabhupada really wanted from us. Sometimes the current of desires might get very heavy, so we can remember some of these prayers. It might help some. And then it's like a shelter. When we take the spiritual master and take the vow, it's a shelter. Just like in Nepal with this big earthquake, there was so much fear. All you hear in the newspaper, they were so fearful, because their shelter was gone. They had no shelter left, physical shelter. So in the same way, we won't have a shelter materially at some point. Only the grace of our spiritual master submitting it to the Supreme Lord. And we can we hear this word, first deserve, then desire. But do we really deserve it? Not really. It's only by the grace of the spiritual master. If we can show some affection for him, maybe we can deserve it just a little bit and become qualified. So this desire, there's so much to say about desire, but when I think of Srila Prabhupada, we also did that play when he was on the shore before he got on the Jaladuta, and he's expressing that he was leaving. And some devotee or a friend of his got a reporter to come by and interview him. And the interview viewer says, "Oh, so you're going abroad, you're going to America. So you're going to see the Empire State Building, you'll go to this and you'll see that and so many things." And Prabhupada said, no, I don't think this is my desire for going to America. He says, "I'm just simply going there, actually, just to follow the instructions of my spiritual master and try to pick up all these drowning victims that are drowning in this material world, drowning with all the material desires, hankering and lamenting, and coming back again and again, drowning again and again." So this was his desire. And therefore, we should also understand that that desire of Srila Prabhupada should be our desire to also go out there and try to help everyone to direct their desires to Krishna. There's so much we can do for Krishna. And that will purify our desires. And at the time of death, with the grace of the devotees, we can simply desire to see his shining face like little Mantakor is describing so nicely in the Krishna Karnamrita. So maybe someone else has something they'd like to share. No one has any material desires they'd like to get rid of? No? They're all purified, taken care of? There's so many things that we can do, and we can help each other. Just like if you have a project and someone, you're so difficult doing it by yourself, and someone comes up and hands you a big wad of money or says, "Here, this is to help your project. Yeah, I can help you." How you go, "Well, what mercy," right? So the same way, we can help Srila Prabhupada with this, with his mission. And he'll be very glad. He'll be so happy if we hop up and contribute whatever we have. Contribute our desire to him. So this is a very, very important thing. And we'll find that when all the rush of the flow or the flood waters come, that is described in the Bhagavad Gita, that if we're full with Krishna, then we'll divert them somewhere else. They won't fill up and drown us. We'll be very peaceful. And it works. Sukhada is a very obvious example of how well it works. Very peaceful. So some more advice?
Having difficulty with material desires, it can be very helpful just to say the prayers of the acharyas or sing the songs like you were doing, and just remembering Gajendra, how he was in such a dangerous position. being attacked by the alligator. And it was always amazing to me that at that point he still remembered his prayers from previous lifetime. He was able to chant them in that dangerous situation, and then Krishna came to get him. So sometimes when you're attacked by material desires, if we just remember the pastimes and say the prayers, we get so much strength and support from that.
Even Dilvamam Thakur, he was a Brahmin before and had so much about Krishna. Although he was swept away, then as soon as he got back, then he was able to remember again and become very strong. So yeah, whatever we can do to fill up. Get the super grade. Don't cheat yourself with economy. As much as possible, fill up with Krishna consciousness. There's so many opportunities in this community for Krishna consciousness. For every little guy to the old guys, there's something that we can do every day. Yes, Sesha Prabhu.
Is that flow our desires, or is there just some desires that are going, we sort of jump in, or does the flow of desires come from us somehow or another?
It's described as soon as the spirit soul contacts material energy, then that sense activity will begin that flow. So it comes, the subtle body, it's coming from other lifetimes. It's coming just by being here in the material world. We're bombarded, right? But if you're not thinking you're just your body and you have this sense control of being filled up with Krishna, then it can be diverted. But it comes with a material body, unfortunately. It's a bad deal. But we can't get rid of it unless we fill it up with something else. Yes?
Thank you so much for the wonderful class, Mataji. When you talked about Bilwa Mangal Thakur, you also mentioned that he pulled out his eyes because he don't want to have that material desires. How do we understand that, Mataji? That's by pulling out?
It's a nice example, extreme example, not recommended. Lord Chaitanya has come in this age and recommended the best process is to fill up our ear holes. Don't take out your eyes. Use your eyes, Prabhupada said, to see the deities. And use your ears to hear the holy name. And that way, we'll have more success. Because you can see, even if you're, cover your eyes, still your mind will go on what you hear. Especially your hearing is so important in this age. So, yes, just plug in to Krishna. There's one nice prayer, another one, Abhilman Thakur, the results of all this. Oh, my Lord, if one engages in your pure devotional service with determination, you become visible in your original transcendental youthful form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As far as liberation is concerned, she stands with folded hands before the devotee waiting to render service. Religion, economic development, sense gratification are all automatically attained without separate endeavor. So we definitely have the best process and should take advantage. Oh, one more question.
Hare Krishna Mataji. So in relation to the three modes of material nature and the mind and the senses, is the three modes of material nature the realm in which the mind and the senses interact with the modes, or is it the mind interacting with the senses that create the three?
Well, the senses are in contact. The intelligence, the mind is the reins, and the intelligence is the driver. So it comes from the senses. And if the mind is not controlled by the intelligence, and the intelligence has to be made pure by reading all this knowledge.
And how does that relate to the three modes of material nature?
They're automatically in the material energy. So when we contact the material energy, different energy has different modes.
So the modes of material nature are not created by our interaction with the senses?
They're already there. And we go in and out of them, unless we can become transcendental. So we can become transcendental also by eating, so we can take nice Bhagavat prasadam. Hare Krishna.